We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Wednesday, January 29th, and today RFK Jr. is going to face grilling from senators at his first confirmation hearing. This coming from NBC News this morning. So they're saying Kennedy must clear an expansive array of hurdles as he seeks to be confirmed as Health and Human Services Secretary, one of the most powerful posts in government. And this is going to be very contentious, I think, on both the Democrat and the Republican side. And so it's interesting that the Senate has scheduled this hearing just for today. It's the only one, unlike tomorrow, where we will see Tulsi Gabbard and also Kash Patel face their confirmation hearings. But they will be held basically at the same time. So we'll be watching those and kind of getting clips and commentary and all of that simultaneously. But RFK definitely poses an interesting confirmation hearing because, you know, until 5 minutes ago, he was a Democrat. Of course, he ran as an independent. There are a lot of social media and media posts about what Donald Trump said about him during the campaign when Kennedy was running for president. And now, of course, he's being nominated for one of the most powerful positions in Trump's own cabinet. But what I find kind of fascinating about that, I mean, all other policy issues and stuff aside, that I think both sides can fairly ask Kennedy. I think it's interesting how everybody tries to use some of the things that everybody said during the primary against a particular nominee as if that's still the opinion and nobody can change their opinion and you can't basically switch teams. I mean, this would be like, you know, somebody who is in the Super Bowl for the Eagles. Is that how the Philadelphia mayor pronounced it? But if one of their players after the Super Bowl went to the Kansas City Chiefs next year and somebody was like, but look at the footage from the Super Bowl last year and you were playing against that other team. And it's like, yeah, but this is a different season. And the board has reset, teams have changed, and that's okay. So I think it's a little bit the same for politics, but let's welcome in our good friend, Todd Starnes, who is, of course, the editor-in-chief of toddstarnes.com, and he also hosts a wide variety of programming, including on Newsmax. Todd, what do you make of the upcoming battle for confirmation that will be RFK Jr. today?
Well, it's going to be fierce, and we've heard upwards of maybe seven senators, Republican senators in the Senate, who could oppose RFK Jr. If that happens, then the nomination would be dead in the water unless President Trump wanted to make an appointment during recess, and that is a possibility. This is one of those choices where, again, me personally, if you were asking Todd Starnes, do you support RFK Jr., I would say no. However, I've been pretty consistent on my overarching philosophy, which is whoever Donald Trump wants, Donald Trump gets. And this is who Trump wants. And when you actually look at what Trump has asked him to do, these are all very reasonable, very conservative things. And let me say this, Jenna. These cabinet nominees are not going in there to accomplish their agendas. They're going in there to accomplish an assignment that President Trump has given them. So these are almost like managers in a corporate structure. These are not free-thinking individuals. They are following through on the will of President Trump. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the plan is this idea of addressing big food. And if anybody's been into their local Kroger or Piggly Wiggly, and you've looked at a lot of the ingredients in this so-called healthy food, a lot of it is very dangerous. A lot of it is leading to chronic obesity across the country. And I really like this idea of getting control, getting a handle on big food and what they're trying to shove into the mouths of American people.
Yeah, and I agree with you and your overarching philosophy, as we've talked about before, Todd Starnes. And I agree with you as well that the focus and the emphasis and the purpose of RFK's nomination is this whole MAHA movement or Make America Healthy Again. And if that was his entire scope of his confirmation and all that he was going to be doing in HHS, then I think there wouldn't be as many other issues. But you mentioned, you know, overall, if this is just you personally, you wouldn't necessarily support him. And there are some Republicans that are very concerned about his stances on things like abortion, for example. And I've long said it, you know, in the last a couple of months, that the GOP Senate really needs to get at minimum adequate assurances from RFK that HHS and his deputies will have pro-life policies in HHS. And so is that part of your personal objection, is the whole pro-life aspect of it? Or what are some things that the GOP might fairly raise today?
Well, it is. And, you know, and of course, while as much as I oppose, you know, abortion, you know, what I find even more troubling is, can we trust the pro-life movement? You know, they keep moving the goalpost. And the as President Trump pointed out, the issue, the call to action was to move that issue back to the states. And unfortunately, there are some, I'm not going to name names, but there are some pro-life organizations out there that are really concerned about their financial bottom line. And I'm not sure they're, you know, I'm not sure they have pure interest at heart here. So the question is, did we really want the issue returned back to the states? If we didn't want the issue returned back to the states, that should have been made somewhere along the lines, because if President Trump had known from day one, well, we really don't want it brought to the states, we want a federal ban, then I suspect President Trump would have gone with the federal ban. But that's not what he was told early on by the pro-life movement. So, look, so far, this president has demonstrated, I think even in within week two of the presidency, that he has been a pro-life president. He is going to defend the pro-life movement. So let's see how this goes. RFK Jr. is not going to turn President Trump into a pro-abortion president.
Right. And Todd Starnes, I think we've seen that very surprisingly in a good way. With everything coming the day of March for Life, how J.D. Vance attended, Trump had a statement by video. He issued the pardons for pro-lifers. We've already seen him direct the HHS in terms of pro-life policy. They're looking at not weaponizing the FACE Act, possibly even repealing it, but his executive order on that, directing the Department of Justice. I mean, there have been a lot of things just even within the first week of the Trump administration that were a lot more pro-life than, frankly, a lot of us anticipated, given the campaign rhetoric and the RNC's position when they changed their platform. That was very welcoming in terms of how, frankly, surprising it was. And so in terms of RFK getting on board with Trump's agenda, I don't personally think that, you know, abortion is his number one issue. He certainly has beliefs on that, like I think everybody else. But for people like you and I, that's probably, you know, one of our top three issues if we're talking about policy. I'm not so sure that that is for RFK. And he may be willing to concede that to then just focus on his MAHA agenda. That's what I'm more anticipating, if I had to predict, from his confirmation hearings today, he gets grilled from some of the GOP senators.
Well, look, 4 days ago, Jenna, the president issued Executive Order 14079, and this is a really sweeping executive order that stops taxpayer funding of abortion. And specifically, it literally ends the use of federal taxpayer dollars to fund or promote elective abortion. Now, it also, you know, when we talk about the international policies, it jumps into the Mexico City policy has been reinstated. That will stop the use of federal taxpayer dollars for overseas abortions. So, again, if you're going through, and it is a pretty massive, it's a pretty massive list of things that the president has done. For example, reinstating the rule that Title X taxpayer funding from subsidizing the abortion industry. They're not allowed to do that anymore. We cut funding to the UN Population Fund, which supports coercive abortion. None of it's you can go down and read this for yourself on the White House website. So the argument coming from some of, in the pro-life community who oppose RFK Jr. is that RFK is going to step in here and completely undo everything President Trump has done on the abortion issue in the past 4 days. And I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And I think that people who are very vocally opposed, even like former Vice President Mike Pence, who's now running ads, even opposing RFK. I mean, that to me is just being an opposition person just to oppose without really threading the needle in voicing some of perhaps some, you know, legitimate concerns or at least questions in a better way. And I don't think that RFK is going to come into a position like HHS and override Donald Trump's authority in terms of the overall presidency. And that, I think, is a mischaracterization of the power of HHS.
So I have a new book out. It's called Twilight's Last Gleaming, Can America Be Saved? And I went to Mar-a-Lago and sat down for several hours with the president just to get a good sense of who he is and where he's going and where he wants to take the country. And I would encourage people to go to my website, toddstearns.com, and read my book. So you get a pretty good clear vision of where Trump is going. And I think that, you know, when you look at some of the people that have already been put into place, Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth, you look at the incredible job that Caroline Leavitt is doing as the White House press secretary. This is a very different Trump presidency. And I think what we are looking at is a focused president, a president who knows the clock is ticking, and we've got a lot to get done. Tom Homan, for example. So there's a lot to be excited about. Again, we may not be happy with every person the president nominates, but I can promise you this, and Vivek Ramaswamy learned this lesson the hard way, I'm afraid. No man is bigger than Trump's vision, and RFK would be wise to remember that.
Yeah, well said. And you definitely called it, even during the primary, Todd Stearns, where a lot of us, you know, myself included, were very concerned whether personnel picks were going to be good, you know, what a second administration would look like, whether this was just going to be, you know, running on revenge or, you know, all of these kinds of questions that we all fairly discussed and debated throughout the campaign. And of course, you know, any conservative or Christian, once Trump won the nomination, of course, would support him regardless of the good that he did over Kamala Harris. And of course, hopefully we all came together on that. And I think we did resoundingly as a country. But you called it initially saying that you thought that Trump had learned some of his lessons, that he was going to go into this with a lot more of his eyes wide open. And I think we saw that even day one with having all of those executive orders prepared. I mean, his transition team was so much more prepared this time. And that was a great thing. And I'm very encouraged by everything that I've seen so far, that all of us who supported him this second time around in the general, that's not going to be fruitless, or we're not going to have to kind of say, well, you know, hey, at least he was better than Kamala. I mean, this is something that we can absolutely 100% support. So in just the last 2 minutes I have with you, and you can go to toddstearns.com, also follow Todd on X and get a lot of his great headlines and commentary. And he's almost as snarky as I am on X, and so I follow him for that reason. But I want to also get... Yeah. We can vie for who's snarkiest on that one. I think you've actually taught me some snark over the years, which is great. And I love you for that. But I also want to get your perspective on Tulsi Gabbard and Kash Patel, who are both going to be up for their own confirmation hearings tomorrow.
Yeah, look, I think all three of these are going to have it's going to be rocky. And again, the issue is going to be how many Republican senators will Trump lose? I think we're already starting to see some wobbling, not only in the Senate, but also in the House on some of the Trump policies that are being implemented. So I think at the end of the day, that Tulsi Gabbard will probably be the most difficult to get across the finish line. But again, it goes back to this one issue. And I think the Republican Party must be unified here. The Democrats they never had this problem. They always get their nominees through. So we've got to stand together. We've got to give President Trump a chance. If things don't work out, they can always be remedied down the road. But let's see what he wants to do with these individuals in the positions that he's picked them for.
Yeah. And I think that the GOP Senate would be wise to have that perspective. What do you expect from some of the lines of questioning for Tulsi Gabbard specifically, and why she is probably set to be one of the more difficult nominees to confirm?
Well, she's a Democrat, so and so is RFK Jr. So I think that's going to be a challenge. There's been a lot of concern over whether or not she has some sort of national security issues. I don't believe those to be legitimate, to be perfectly honest with you, Jenna. I think it's just a lot of partisan sniping. The Democrats are pretty angry at her, for leaving the party. But honestly, I think the argument can be made that the Democrat Party left Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah, and I think she said that very clearly, and so is more of an independent. I mean, certainly, not a full-fledged Republican, but a lot of her priorities and, in her last several years even, speaking at conservative gatherings like, CPAC and others, she has mentioned this very specifically. And I think it's interesting that that's a concern for Republicans, but also just because it's Trump. And because she has left and sort of denounced the current Democrat Party, she probably won't get votes from the Democrat side who might otherwise have voted for her if this was, say back in 2020 when she was running on the Democrat ticket for president.
And as far as Kash Patel, based on what this administration has been doing to the American people, and I want to, let's just focus, forget politics. They've been going after evangelical Christians and Catholics, throwing them in prison, targeting their homes, these raids by the FBI. Kash Patel needs to go in and not only clean house, but we also, yes, do have to get justice, not retribution, but justice. And all of those who targeted the Christians because of their faith or their pro-life stance, those people need to pay a price. They're the ones that need to be in the D.C. gulag. So again, I believe in the rule of law here, Jenna, and I believe that they have violated that law. Kash Patel, they're terrified of Kash Patel because he will go in and he will clean house, and we need that. We need an FBI, not the state police.
So well said, and I couldn't agree more, and I think that he and Pam Bondi and also John Radcliffe, who has been confirmed as a CIA head, I mean, all of them need to look at the deep state. They need to look at also enacting justice and fairness. I mean, I've been watching some of the news from the legacy media who are just so upset that Trump fired a bunch of inspectors general. And they're going, these are the unbiased people in there. And he can't, they're supposed to hold him accountable. And like, the reason he fired them is because they weren't actually unbiased. And if they're not doing their job as an inspector general, he can fire them. And that's what we should want. And with the perspective that the left has had, that they have come after Christians, conservatives, Trump supporters, their political opposition for literally everything, probably including, tearing off their mattress tags in 1997. I mean, it's just utterly beyond the pale of weaponization of government to just enact justice and to have fairness and to actually have a rule of law, have these agencies do what they should be doing, and on a much smaller scale too. I mean, return the FBI to actual policing, not all of this other stuff. The left is just, you know, panicking, but it's a beautiful thing to watch. We're already out of time, but Todd Starnes, always really appreciate your commentary. We will be watching today with interest, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
This Sanctity of Life Month, we honor the over 66 million babies whose lives have been tragically ended through abortion since Roe v. Wade. Sadly, with the abortion pill accounting for over 60% of all abortions, babies' lives are at even greater risk now. But in the midst of this darkness, there is a light that shines, and that's Preborn. Preborn's network of clinics have rescued over 300,000 babies from abortion and have prayed with over 80,000 women to come to Christ.
When I heard her heartbeat, I decided to keep her. And now my daughter's about to be 3. I don't know where my life would be without her.
An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. This is Jenna Ellis asking you to join Preborn in protecting life. One ultrasound session costs $28, and $140 will sponsor 5 ultrasounds. Any gift will help, $100, $200, even $1,000. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And in addition to everything that Trump has been doing in terms of signing executive orders and taking care of a lot of things here within the United States, on Thursday, he also spoke virtually to the global business leaders and politicians at the World Economic Forum's annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland. So this was part of what he had to say. This is cut one.
The administration is acting with unprecedented speed to fix the disasters we've inherited from a totally inept group of people and to solve every single crisis facing our country. This begins with confronting the economic chaos caused by the failed policies of the last administration. Over the past 4 years, our government racked up $8 trillion in wasteful deficit spending and inflicted nation-wrecking energy restrictions, crippling regulations, and hidden taxes like never before. The result is the worst inflation crisis in modern history and sky-high interest rates for our citizens and even throughout the world. Food prices and the price of almost every other thing known to mankind went through the roof. President Biden totally lost control of what was going on in our country, but in particular with our high inflation economy and at our border. Because of these ruinous policies, total government spending this year is $1.5 trillion higher than was projected to occur when I left office just 4 years ago. Likewise, the cost of servicing the debt is more than 230% higher than was projected in 2020. The inflation rate we are inheriting remains 50% higher than the historic target. It was the highest inflation probably in the history of our country.
And Trump also welcomed $600 billion worth of Saudi Arabian investment and said he would ask the crown prince to round it out to $1 trillion. So went into a lot of other economic issues and so forth. But Davos is always a very interesting whole problem that conservatives really need to pay attention to. And we all remember in 2018 when Donald Trump in his first term spoke to Davos, and really, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people agree with this, he really became world public enemy number one because of his comments at Davos. This was part of it. This is cut two.
I'm here to deliver a simple message. There has never been a better time to hire, to build, to invest, and to grow in the United States. America is open for business, and we are competitive once again.
And so clearly he's presenting a vision for America that is America first, not globalism. And it completely contrasts on a lot of different levels with the purpose of the World Economic Forum and the worldview of a lot of those movers and shapers. So let's welcome in Larry Taunton, who is an author and a columnist with contributions to a wide variety of publications. You can follow him on X at Larry Taunton. And he actually went undercover to the World Economic Forum this last time in Davos and has a documentary out where he says that he gives you a peek behind the curtain of the WEF and their agenda. So, Larry, this is really fascinating. What did you make of the World Economic Forum and Trump's presence now back on this stage and the world stage?
Well, first of all, Jenna, it's great to be with you. And the WEF, these are a bunch of globalist scumbags, Jenna. I mean, these are people who are hell-bent on destroying chiefly the sovereignty of the United States and of bleeding it of its wealth for their own purposes. And this is my third year in a row to attend the World Economic Forum. And, Jen, as you can imagine, there are other conservative news outlets that are there, and they're there with their camera crews and doing their thing. Me, I just pretend to be one of the WEFers, and that's what they refer to themselves as, the WEF, and that they are WEFers. And so I just crash their various meetings and listen. And, of course, you get something very different when you sit and listen to them. And one of the things that you come away with, Jenna, is this year, unlike previous years when I've attended, these are extraordinarily arrogant people. And I refer to the WEF as the HOA from hell. You know, just about everybody has had some kind of experience with an HOA, and seldom is it profitable. But this is a global HOA, and they're busybodies who are very interested in what you're doing. And yet, when I'm there, Jenna, they're all driving around in their big gas-guzzling SUVs and luxury sedans and their private jets, and they were eating steak. I saw a lot of beef being consumed, but I didn't see anybody eating any bugs.
Well, so yeah, crickets weren't on the menu. I mean, that's even on the menu in one of the restaurants in DC that I went to, and it was like their delicacy was cricket tacos. And I thought, wow, that's got to be really, really salty. But your point is well taken, Larry, because these individuals who want to impose their view of keeping, you know, the world safe and healthy and you know, their green new vision and all of that nonsense, they don't even abide by it themselves. And so it really is the epitome of elitism to say we want everyone else to do all of these things so that we can go out and do everything that we're telling them not to do. And our carbon footprint just won't be collectively as big as everybody else's. I mean, that's really what they're saying. So Trump, though, poses an exactly opposite and opposing view to them. And so I see, you know, his presence as being in conflict with ultimately what they want to achieve. Yet Bill Gates was meeting with Trump. And so, you know, we have a lot of these conflicts. How do you see that playing out over the next 4 years?
Well, one of the things that I think is going for us, and you're correct about Trump. I mean, Trump wasn't there bodily, and yet the entire time it was like he was. I mean, his presence was felt. And then when he appeared via video on Thursday, he was very firm in saying what, you know, his vision was. But he was also very presidential, surprisingly so, and spoke, you know, very complimentary of a number of people there and said he plans to attend next year. But I think one of the things that we have going for us is this, Jenna. The WEF, I would define this annual meeting as being divided into three categories of people. At the top, you have the planners, that is the ideologues, the people who are absolutely committed to their anti-human, and I want to stress it is fundamentally an anti-human agenda. Then the second tier of people who are there, they're guys that are, you know, they're there perhaps because they're vendors, they're trying to sell things to governments, or because they just blow with, you know, with whatever
what direction the wind is going. And then down at the bottom, you have a lot of young people, people who are, I mean, the WEF targets young people. They have a youth version of the World Economic Forum. And those people who are idealists who honestly just don't really know any better. So to me, I thought it was very encouraging that of the G7 nations who would typically be represented at the WEF, only one was there this year, and it was the outgoing chancellor of Germany. Otherwise, you had guys like, let's say, Zuckerberg, and as you know, Zuckerberg and Bezos, and where were they? They were at Trump's inauguration. So I think we're seeing a real turn away from globalism. I think we've got them very much on the run. Now, I don't want to declare victory prematurely because it's like a virus that can reassert itself at any time. But I think we're winning.
That's really encouraging. And I think that, if America is any indication, and even how some people are reacting to the United States and how we are completely rejecting a lot of the globalists and, DEI and cultural Marxists, all of this nonsense, that's encouraging to other countries as well, that maybe their leaders will get on board. So do you think that the WEF is actually losing some of its influence, perhaps?
I think they are at the moment. As I say, I thought it very telling that you only had one G7 head present. But, something else, and I wish Jenna had some means of sending this to you to see it, because it's spectacular. I've tweeted it, and when I get off the phone, I'll tweet it again. But it is a roundtable discussion at the World Economic Forum of all these policy wonks and, academics. And one of them, his name's gone straight out of my head, but he's at the Kennedy School for Government at Harvard University. And he said, in fact, the documentary to which you referred begins with quoting him. And what he says is, what we've just seen in Donald Trump is something that's never been done in political history before, the resurrection of someone who is politically dead. And then another fellow who's sitting there, he says, I think we have to face the fact that not just that Trump won, but that we have lost. I thought those were staggering comments.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And I think, as you said, it's encouraging. And I think it's definitely something we need to pay attention to as well, because, the left isn't just going to go away silently and say, okay, well, no. Trump's back in and, his political career has been resurrected. So, okay, we lost, too bad, So what, we're already out of time, but what do you expect for people to pay attention to in terms of maybe a rebound of their agenda?
Well, Jenna, far be it for me to tell you what you already know better than I do, but we are dealing with people who are incredibly corrupt and they are desperate. Desperate people do desperate things. So I think we have to be on guard for extraordinary corrupt activities.
Well, we do need to be on guard, and that's a biblical principle as well, to ensure that we are always on guard and ensuring also that we are praying and we are rightly dividing truth from falsity. So Larry Taunton, really appreciate your insights. And again, you can follow him at Larry Taunton and also watch that documentary. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we're talking about Trump just completely overhauling everything that the left has been trying to do for the last 4+ years in America, Congress is now looking at and working to turn Trump's DEI ban into law. That headline coming from the Washington Times and was posted on Representative Tom Tiffany's X account. He says this: your tax dollars should never fund discrimination, exclusion, and indoctrination, DEI. I think that's a great way to interpret DEI. That's why I introduced legislation yesterday to make President Trump's DEI ban permanent. And the representative joins us now. So good morning, Representative Tiffany. And this sounds like an excellent bill, and hopefully it can make DEI permanent. So what has Trump done with the executive order, and what needs to be done through your bill to make this ban permanent?
Yeah, so first of all,
If we're going to end discrimination in America, wouldn't it be best if the federal government start by not enabling discrimination? And that's exactly what our bill does here, Jenna. This reverses the executive order put back in place way back in the 1960s by President Lyndon Baines Johnson. And President Trump has said that he is ending that executive order. And the DEI ban that he is putting in place mirrors the bill that we've introduced. So one of my colleagues, Representative Burgess Owens from Utah, and myself, we have introduced this bill in the two previous sessions of Congress, got very little attention, but now it's getting a lot more attention after what President Trump has done. And we're hoping that we're going to get a hearing and be able to advance this bill through the House of Representatives.
Yeah, I'm sure it is getting a lot more attention because people are probably thinking, oh, wait, this could actually happen. So has Speaker Johnson, have you talked to him about it or the rest of the Republican conference? And, you know, what's the thought in terms of this actually moving forward this session?
Yeah, what we're going to try to do is I think there'll be a couple committees of jurisdiction, but in particular the Judiciary Committee. And I sit on the Judiciary Committee. Our chairman is Jim Jordan. I have to talk to Jim about this, but I think he will. I'm hoping he'll be amenable to it. And I think we're going to be able to get a hearing on this. And it's going to be really interesting to see how our friends on the left react to this, because if you look at even states like California with their referendums, their ballot referendums that are done statewide, they've rejected this notion of preferences, even in a state like that. Americans find this repulsive. They believe that merit should decide whether people get a job, whether they get a contract, whatever the case may be, that it should be merit-based and we should be a colorblind society. It's really something that really gives me hope for America, how strongly people react to this.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating how the left also twists the intention of DEI and also conservatives' objections to it as if somehow by objecting to DEI, we're saying that you know we're only for the white male to advance basically, and so you're against any minorities, women, you know, anything like that, where that's not the point of DEI, and that's not the correct definition of DEI. And so how difficult has it been in talking to some of perhaps your colleagues across the aisle in terms of just correct definitions?
Yeah, so it's so deeply embedded in society. You know, this has been just such a pernicious thing that it's embedded itself in our institutions throughout society, in particular our universities and government contracting. But how I look at it, and what I come back to those people that question why we would do something like this. So in other words, your assumption is that a minority or a woman or whomever cannot compete on a level playing field. In other words, you are the racist. You are the one that is assuming that someone cannot participate in a merit-based society. And I just firmly reject that. And that's why it's so good to have as my co-author on this, Representative Burgess Owens, an African-American man from Utah, very successful professional athlete. I mean, he is passionate about this. We can compete. We can have strong, vibrant communities competing on merit. And so if there's anything that is racist here, it's those that assume that a minority can't compete. I categorically reject that argument. I think all Americans and all humans have innate qualities and abilities. It's just a matter of finding them.
Yeah, so well said, and I couldn't agree more. And I love your characterization of saying, you know, that that women and minorities, of course, in these job categories and so forth, can compete on a fair merit-based scale, and yet you have the very same left that are suggesting that men should compete literally in women's sports, which is clearly unfair due to the biology and the makeup of what makes a man a man. And so on one hand, they're saying that they're for, you know, women and minorities. But then on the other hand, when it comes to women's sports, they're not wanting to protect the integrity of that competition and the rule structure that surrounds the reason that we protect women's sports. And so they're totally conflicted, and they're arguing both sides of a of both of these categories that are ultimately just nonsensical and absurd.
So, Jenna, just listen to yourself as you speak at this point. Is it any wonder why psychology departments in some elite universities are so busy? They're just spinning people's heads with the inconsistencies with which they approach these issues. And so, it is really a simple bill. And I would also give a shout out to a public interest law firm in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. They're out to outstanding work. They've put numbers to this, and they say this is costing Americans over $100 billion. And a quick example on this, I had an employer in my district contact me last week, and he has a family member that handles compliance for their industrial company. And he said his sister was just giddy that day when President Trump did that, because it's going to eliminate all kinds of paperwork. But they put the cost, Will does, at over $100 billion that this costs Americans doing this nonsensical paperwork and filling out forms trying to comply with this stuff.
Wow. And I'm speaking with Representative Tom Tiffany. And, you know, I think you're absolutely correct that that this is why there are so many confused individuals out there. And this is exactly why DEI needs to be rooted out of K through 12. And it should not be taught to America's youth. And this is why, you know, DEI in education, getting rid of all of that is such a good thing. But also just changing the culture of how America even looks and approaches these issues. And the Trump administration also put out an executive order yesterday that was titled Protecting Children from Chemical and Surgical Mutilation, speaking about the biological differences between men and women. I mean, in just basic common sense and fact and returning to reality. And you posted, this is a huge win for America's youth. Thank you, President Trump. I could not agree more. This executive order, I think, is yet another iteration of just returning America to common sense.
I mean, when you think about chemical castrations, mutilations that are going on, and, you know, when we adopt their language, which is gender affirming and stuff like that, we do a great injustice to what is happening, because these are mutilations that are going on. We are hearing the stories from young people who have now reached their 20s that are like, they have such regrets. And we know that this is, you know, puberty in that period of time is a time of great uncertainty for a person. You know, I think all of us experience that. And there's people that are taking advantage of that period of time for these young people to exploit them. And it is horrific what they are doing to them. And great credit to President Trump and his team that they are targeting that now and exposing to the American public the travesty that is going on with these sex change conversions that are happening.
Absolutely. And I'm grateful for the Trump administration for starting off so strongly with all of these executive orders. But, you know, as we mentioned at the top of this segment, it needs to be an enduring win to take some of these executive orders and to put them into legislation. How is Congress and the Republican conference looking at over the next at least 2 years, hopefully four, for taking some of these wins and executive orders and actually codifying them so that they can be more enduring and not just rescinded by, you know, perhaps another president down the line? I mean, there's no real reason to vote for a Democrat at any point in time, but, you know, that could happen in the future, of course.
Yeah, without a doubt. This stuff should be put in statute. I mean, as you said, we would like it to be enduring. And so some of this stuff, like in regards to sex changes, certainly the DEI stuff that Representative Owens and I have introduced, We're hoping to advance that in this session of Congress. And I think it would be so clarifying for the American public. That's why it's so important for us to get hearings on this, get votes in committee, push them out to the full House floor. Let's get votes on these, and let's find out who's going to stand with the American people, because this is part of the reason, Jenna, that they voted for President Trump on November 5th, because he called this stuff out on the campaign trail, said he's going to do something about it. He's doing something about it. Congress should too.
Absolutely. And so for people who are very excited about this, which I know is vast, you know, almost probably everybody in our AFR audience, other than, the haters and the leftists that tune in, and we welcome them too, because this is probably one of the only times that they hear truth on the radio. But for all of our AFR family who really want to help these initiatives and they're championing what you are doing in Congress, how can the church and also the individual Christian conservative help advance these priorities?
Yeah, the best way, I don't know, I don't have the number of the bill. It's referred to as the FAIR Act, the bill that Representative Owens and I have introduced. So they could call their representatives and say, please support the FAIR Act. And we can certainly provide information. As you know, people can go to our social media account. They can go to my website as Congressman Tiffany, and they can find information on this that they can then pen an email or call their congressman and tell them to support this, that this is something that is a seminal moment in America where we're going to be able to turn back from these evil things that have burrowed their way into American society.
Yeah, and I would really encourage everyone who is listening to call your representatives and encourage them to support the FAIR Act, and you can get all that information as Representative Tiffany mentioned. His X account is at Rep. Tiffany Burgess Owens. The co-sponsor of this legislation is at Burgess Owens. Follow them on X, even if you don't want to, you know, post or really engage on X. I'm always a fan of at least having a place where you can go and directly get the information for yourself, not have it filtered for you through anyone else, even me, right? I mean, there's so many things out there that I have to be selective on the topics that we discuss, and hopefully they're the most important ones to conservative Christians that we cover throughout not only my show, but then also AFR, but there's just not enough time to cover everything. So you need to be informed yourself. And so if you don't have an X account, yes, it is kind of a dumpster fire, but you can be selective and you can at least get the information. And so just last question in the last 2 minutes I have with you, Representative Tom Tiffany. So, you know, we always do encourage people to call their representatives, you know, make their voice known. Does that really change the mind of a representative who, you know, maybe was on the fence or hadn't even really looked at supporting a bill or was opposing? How much do these phone calls really matter?
Yeah, when we get dozens of calls in our office, for example, in my office, my staff will alert me where they'll say, hey, we're getting a lot of traffic on this particular issue. And I think a lot of offices do that. So it does make a difference. And I mean, we can't stop after November 5th. People did the most important thing they could do, which was vote on November 5th. But it is so important to stay engaged, because you cannot let us relax in Congress, because too often we go back to our old ways. You have to, at this point in time, such an important point in time in American history, you have to stay engaged and take your country back.
So well said. And did you hear that, everyone? Dozens of calls. Imagine if it were hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of phone calls, then that would be a real big wake-up call to members of Congress. So your voice does matter, and of course, our voice in aggregate. So Representative Tom Tiffany, always appreciate that, and thank you for bringing to our attention the FAIR Act and why we should support it. And I'm hopeful that Congress and the Republican conference will continue to pass this type of just common sense legislation that supports the America First agenda. So we're already all out of time for today, but as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.